Well, as we dive into the third and final hour of the program, Scott and BR coming up here at about 2:50 with our little crossover, and they'll take you up until 6 o'clock tonight. We're going to head out once again to the Corky's Hotline, joined by a very talented guy. He's on Fox Sports 1. He covers the NFL and does an outstanding job of that and has been doing it for a long period of time. Alex Marvez joins us on the Corky's Hotline. Alex, welcome. Great to have you today. And I would imagine you've been rather busy the last couple of days.
Yeah, it has been absolutely crazy. You know, between all the rules proposals and handling that, coaches, general managers, owners, and then some of the news just coming out of the NFL, and one of, I think, the biggest stories affecting the way that we're going to be watching football games in the future, just going to get a taste of it in October, Bills, Jaguars, online only, the first streamed regular season NFL game. How weird is that? Not going to be on DirecTV, just going to be broadcast locally over the airwaves in the Buffalo and Jacksonville markets. Everywhere else, you're going to have a computer to watch it. And that is really maybe just the start, because the NFL, you know, they're all about the cash. They're going to be looking to expand that platform and put games online only and see who, if a YouTube or a Google highest bidder, will be the one showing the game.
Well, it seems like to me they're kind of going maybe to the pay-per-view down the road on some of these local games.
That's a great question and a great point. I do think at that point, though, they might run into a little bit more government resistance, so to speak, because one of the things that has endeared the NFL is the fact that their product's for free. You know, cable television is a little bit different. Of course, you have to pay for cable. But even then, if you're in your home team market, you're able to see the game for free as long as it's a sellout. And speaking of sellouts, since we know all about the San Diego Chargers and their problem selling tickets, a one-year moratorium on NFL blackouts. I think it's great news for San Diego fans as your team tries to get its stadium issues resolved. And boy, I do hope the Chargers end up staying in San Diego. It is crazy right now surrounding LA, and that's another issue here at the NFL owners' meetings.
Well, you know, Alex, you bring up the TV blackout being lifted for 2015, and you know we know why, because of the uncertainty of the Chargers and the Raiders and the St. Louis Rams. But you know, to give that to the fans in 2015, and then maybe pull that away in 2016, boy, I wonder what kind of backlash it'd take for that.
Well, I think there'd be a lot of unhappy folks. Look, reality is that there's so few markets around this country that are having problems selling these games out, and the NFL owners do a lot of bells and whistles to get it done. They're ticket giveaways, maybe selling to groups, things like that, even just swallowing the tickets themselves. But I think the NFL read the handwriting on the wall from the FCC that their blackout rule was arcane and that the FCC may have been the one shooting down the NFL. And so rather than allow themselves to take another, you know, sort of look bad in public, the NFL would rather look proactive, like, hey, look, we're going to give you our games for free. So the big question for me is now what happens as far as ticket sales? Are teams going to lower ticket prices to get fans in the stadium? Because let's be honest, watching the game on television is a much more enjoyable experience for a lot of folks than going to the games themselves.
Well, and I think you could say that for people who cover the NFL. I mean, I've talked to a lot of writers who would rather sit at home now and watch two or three games and be home in time for the Sunday night game, to where, you know, if they're writing a notes column on Monday, they can get a lot of information.
Oh, trust me, I'm one of those guys. I mean, I love being able to keep up with everything, because if you're just at one game, it's hard to keep track as to what's going on around the league, you know, at the same time you're at the game. On top of that, hitting the locker room after the game and, you know, painting a picture from there, it gets difficult. But, you know, there is something to be said in the media for being there, you know, and having a chance to talk to players right after the game and seeing things that you're not going to be able to get just by watching on television at home. I mean, one of the things that sets media apart from maybe some bloggers or fans or opinion columns on the internet is actually having the access to speak to players and providing perspective. So while I think there's value into being at NFL games, personally, I prefer Monday night games, Thursday night games, because it allows me to watch the whole slate of games on Sunday.
I hear you on that one. Alex Marvez joining us on the Corky's Hotline on the Mighty 1090. Alex, they call it the NFL owners meetings, but as you mentioned, there's general managers there, there are coaches there. What is their role during these meetings?
Well, I mean, a lot of discussion of the rules things, for example. The competition committee meets with all the head coaches, on Saturday or Sunday, and they explain to them, these are some of the things that we're talking about. What feedback do you want to give us as coaches? How can we maybe tweak some of these rules so that they're acceptable to you and then potentially be approved by their team? So you get a lot of good give and take there. Sometimes it's just a chance to catch up and speak. to be quite honest with you, maybe the genesis of a trade would happen from a coach and general manager being here. And you know, look, there was a little bit of fun in the sun, so to speak. I mean, they didn't pick, you know, Des Moines, Iowa at this time of year to go hold this meeting. I mean, it is a reward for some of the folks in the NFL, a little bit of bonding, you know, and families are out here of the coaches and general managers in most cases, things like this. But it's really maybe just a state of the NFL as well. I mean, Roger Goodell delivering an address about respect for the game and things like this, just reinforcing some messages. And it's, again, a great chance for people in this league to catch up. And, of course, the media responsibilities as well. And this has become a large media event. And the NFL, without games and only having 16 games during the year, how else do we deal with football? We talk about the offseason. The NFL is a year-round venture. The offseason is just the NFL without games.
Hey, give me your take on the San Diego Chargers right now. And I know Tom Telesco and even Mike McCoy had comments this morning, Telesco yesterday, saying it's not on the radar for us to move Phillip Rivers. He'll be going into the final year of his contract, going to make just under $16 million. And there was that rumor out there maybe he'd be shipped to Tennessee for the second overall pick and be reunited with Ken Wisenhunt. There was even talk that maybe he'd end up with the New York Jets because they don't have a veteran quarterback, even though they traded for Ryan Fitzpatrick and Geno Smith hasn't worked out. Your thoughts on the Chargers going forward? Can they legitimately compete against the Denver Broncos in the AFC West?
I think they can compete against the Broncos. I'll be curious to see what a 39-year-old Peyton Manning is able to accomplish. And you know, Gary Kubiak says that he's going to base his coaching around Peyton's offense. And Gary is going to shift away from what he normally does with a quarterback taking snaps from under center, a lot of the bootlegs and waggles that he likes to run with a mobile quarterback, because that's not Peyton Manning's forte. So they will continue, according to Gary Kubiak, to run that Peyton Manning offense. But again, at age 39, will he be able to make it through a season? Will there be a dip in play? We didn't see the same Peyton Manning in the second half of the season as we did in the first half of the season, but he did throw 39 touchdowns, 14 interceptions. He's still one of the game's top quarterbacks. You know, the Chargers, to me right now, seem to be mired in this middle-class status of the NFL. They're a good enough team to make the playoffs. How far can they get, though? What is it that they need to get over the top? I think they need some really dynamic, you know, maybe another dynamic playmaker on the offensive side of the football. And at running back right now, there isn't probably a dynamic running back we can identify. I don't think there's a dynamic receiver that we can identify on this Chargers team. From what I understood, they may have had interest in Randall Cobb of Green Bay, but when Randall re-signed with Green Bay, he was out of the equation, and they weren't going to pay $11 million a year for Jeremy Maclin. So you see them make a little bit of noise at the receiver position, but not too much. I think defensively, too, they still need a complementary pass rusher with Melvin Ingram. I mean, this is a good team. I mean, this is a 9-7, 10-6 type of team, but what is it going to take to really get over the top and get back into a Super Bowl? I just think they need to hit a home run as far as adding someone dynamic on the offensive side of the football.
Well, you talk about Denver and you talk about the Chargers. What about the Kansas City Chiefs? They were 9-7, and it seems like Andy Reid's got this team maybe headed in the right direction.
You know, they're another team that I consider more of the middle class of the NFL. And I mean that because now you have Jeremy Maclin, who will upgrade this team. They made a nice move on the offensive line, getting Ben Grubbs in a trade with New Orleans. And Paul Faneca comes in, going to compete for a starting spot in guard. They still have an issue at center. But, you know, there's a little bit more from a playmaking standpoint for Alex Smith to work with. But I'm just not sure how good the Chiefs team can be with Alex Smith under center. Is he a dynamic enough quarterback to help them progress? I think defensively, there's still some questions in that secondary, although Justin Houston, one of the best pass rushers in football. Now look at the Chargers, Chiefs, and Broncos as really sort of almost being on the same level playing field. Broncos a little bit above those two teams right now, and then the Raiders, you know, bringing up the rear. It'll be a better Oakland team, but they're not going to the postseason in 2015, and they may not even be there in 2016 with the rebuild they have going on.
I mean, Jack Del Rio brings obviously some professionalism in there, but they've got a long ways to go. Are you surprised they brought back Reggie McKenzie for another year as a GM?
I am. You know, and I think that, you know, Reggie hit a home run in the draft last year. You get a Derek Carr, you get a Khalil Mack. You know, they had some difference makers, you know, that he was able to acquire in the draft after really whiffing his first 2 years on the job. But I thought maybe you want a clean slate. Maybe you want to bring someone else to work with Jack Del Rio that Jack has a history with. But they are staying the course with Reggie McKenzie, you know. And this is the first offseason I think they really feel like they were able to dip in the free agency and do some of the things they wanted rather than the one-year rental players that they had in the past. But, I mean, honestly, they're still the Raiders until they prove differently. I mean, 9 free agent signings. You know, the teams that win are the ones that have consistency on a regular basis through the draft, and they're hitting home runs there, and they're augmenting their teams with free agency if they even need to. Those are the consistent winners. In this case, that's not the Raiders.
Alex Marvez from Fox Sports 1 talking NFL with us today here on the Corky's Hotline on the Mighty 1090. Russell Wilson, they say they're working on a long-term deal. Do you think that'll get done by the start of training camp?
I would imagine so. I mean, especially when you think about Russell, you know, he's going to make what? He's scheduled to make about $700,000 a year in base salary. I mean, it's just so small because of the way that the rookie contracts are now. So, you know, if he wanted to play out his contract and just refuse to sign, then he's facing a franchise tag the next year. So you start to do the math here. Let's say he's franchised at, let's say $17 million for the 2016 season. Well, about $18 million over 2 years is $9 million a season. That's okay, but that's not what Russell Wilson should be paid as an elite quarterback. So it's in his best interest to strike a long-term deal, even though he doesn't have a lot of leverage. The Seahawks knew this day was coming, and to their credit, have done an outstanding job of cap management, getting a lot of their key players redone last year when there was space available in anticipation of signing Russell Wilson to a new contract. And he's worth it. I mean, this guy's amazing. His feel of the game is so phenomenal as far as knowing when to run, knowing when to slide. He's composed. I mean, I feel bad that he had to deal with the worst play call in Super Bowl history, and he's going to be part of that. But the guy is a special player, and he's worth the cash.
Probably the worst play call in the history of football.
I second and dumb. That's my name for it, and I'm not going to change from it. The absolute dumbest play call I have ever seen.
And I'll sign off on that as well. Hey, it's getting really ugly between the Minnesota Vikings and Adrian Peterson, his agent. What do you think is going to end up happening there? Because, I mean, right now it looks bad.
It does look bad, but, I mean, there's nothing that the agent can do that's going to get the Vikings to cut Adrian Peterson. Why would they? And unless someone is offering great value in a trade, why would they trade him? If they're willing to pay him $12.75 million in base salary for the 2015 season, I mean, that's why they signed him to a three-year contract. They feel he's that dynamic a player, and they're committed to having him. And I don't feel they're going to feel blackmailed or, you know, by the agent to have to do something. And, look, I give Ben Dogger credit. You know, he's trying what he can to get Adrian Peterson out. I'm sure he envisions a better contract somewhere else that would pay Adrian more money up front for the 2015 season while he's 30 years old, and maybe lock him into a team for a couple more years, as opposed to now in Minnesota where they can cut him next year. He'd be out of the market. He'd be a year older, and maybe the market for his services isn't as great. You know, unless the Arizona Cardinals step up and make a trade, I don't see anyone really on the horizon that has the cap space available for Adrian Peterson and the inkling to give up the type of draft bounty the Minnesota Vikings are looking for. I think they're just going to hope this calms down in time. Adrian realizes he's going to play for the Minnesota Vikings and just then comes in and has a great season. And maybe they part ways in 2016.
Hey, Alex, as I let you get out of here, any other big announcements you think going to come out of this meeting rule-wise or anything else from the commissioner that we should be maybe looking for?
I think the extra point situation will be something that is discussed. I've been talking about moving it to the 15-yard line per the request of the New England Patriots. Talk about moving it to the 1-yard line per the request of the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Patriots' proposal would make it a more challenging extra point and maybe encourage more teams to do the two-point conversion under certain situations. And moving it to the 1-yard line, again, another effort to entice having a two-point conversion done. I think the solution to the extra points, real simple. Essentially, you award 7 points for a touchdown. If you want to get rid of the extra point, the team wants to go for two, they can. But if they fail, they only get 6 points for the touchdown they scored. It gets rid of the extra point. It's a done deal. But Coach, I don't know how many calls you get with fans all that vehement about, we have to get rid of the extra point. I mean, I think this is more self-induced by the NFL than anything else. I don't think fans really care. I think they're fine with the extra point the way it is.
Well, I agree with you, but I actually like what you're saying right there. You get, you know, the 7 points. If you want to go, then you lose a point. If you don't make it, you go down to six. I like that. But, again, it seems like they're trying to go to these rules almost arena football-like.
Yeah, I mean, there is that push. You know, look, I think there's great debate in a game. You know, look, we've seen changes in the NBA. I mean, there's a three-point line, right? I mean, we have a shot clock in college basketball, and I know these are big things that have happened, but through the years, they didn't always stay that way. I mean, we're looking at three-on-three overtime in hockey, you know, to try to decide things in the game. It's a healthy discussion to have it. It's just when the rules start getting too complicated and so gimmicky, you know, like what the Indianapolis Colts proposed. If you make a two-point conversion, you should be allowed to go for a 50-yard extra point to get 9 points. I mean, I'm thinking of MTV Jams and the 30-point basket or something, you know, and Ring the Fire to be kicking the football. I mean, are you serious? You know, so that's why I do think it's gimmicky, but I love the debate. Anything that makes the game better for the fans, for the players, for everybody, I'm all for. It's just, you just hope it doesn't go over the top with some stuff.
Well, that, and you got to keep the game moving. You can't be having all these slowdowns. These games are already long enough.
Yes. Oh, trust me. They're very big on 3 hours. That's what they want the games at, 3 hours long. And anything after that, it starts bleeding into other games. I mean, we've seen it. And you know the rule that you can't air television commercials on a late broadcast if the early game is still going on. So what will happen is sometimes you'll have almost an entire quarter played without a commercial break, and then you'll be jamming commercials in the second quarter after a game ends and it's joined in progress. That's not the way the NFL likes to do business.
Hey, Alex, really enjoy your work. Thanks so much for the time and continued success.
No problem. Be good. Thanks.
There you go. Alex Marvez, NFL analyst for Fox Sports 1, does a great job. He's been at it a long time, and he's really, really good. And we thank him for joining us from the NFL owners meetings. And thank to Scott Bear as well. And we had a couple of one guest yesterday, Vincent Bonsignor from the LA Daily News. These guys are getting pulled in a lot of different directions, and we really appreciate them come on.